We've been talking, as most of us are aware, about the Sermon on the Mount. The portion that we've kind of covered so far, really what we've discussed, is the blessings, the influence, and the character of a kingdom citizen. And the reason I say kingdom citizen, Jesus is talking to people who were part of a physical kingdom that God had promised, the kingdom of Israel. But the discussion that he had, the way in which he approached the topics, much of that, in principle anyway, if not in actual application, carry over to us today in that spiritual kingdom, the church. Last week we discussed greatest and least in the kingdom with respect to keeping and teaching the commandments of the law. And Jesus said that in order for one to enter the kingdom, their righteousness, the people he was talking to, needed to exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. Remember, the scribes and Pharisees were placed on a pedestal, if you will, of being the example, the ideal of what righteousness was. A lot of their being on that pedestal was their placing themselves on that pedestal. Hey, look at us. We're the model. Follow us. Do what we do. Do what we say, and you'll be right with God. Jesus said to these farmers and fishermen and people that were struggling to get by, you got to be more righteous than those folks. Remember last week I talked about, I could just picture in my mind anyway, the multitudes turning to look wherever and they probably knew where the Pharisees were standing, where the scribes were, kind of off by themselves because, don't want to be contaminated by the common folk, That kind of an attitude that the Pharisees seemed to have when you look back at first century history. And so you could almost just picture people turn around and look at, what are these people going to think about that statement? That our righteousness has to exceed theirs if we're going to even enter the kingdom. We're going to continue on the rest of chapter 5. We're not going to cover all the rest of chapter 5 today. But the rest of chapter 5 is a series of contrasts. They start out with, each contrast starts out with, you have heard that it was said. And he'll end, and Jesus will end with, but I say. So there's a contrast between what they've heard the scribes and Pharisees say, because the scribes and Pharisees were generally the teachers. Notice that he doesn't say in these passages, Moses said, or the law says, but rather, you've heard it said, that such and such. Today we're going to talk about anger, murder, and accompanying thoughts along that line. Most, if not all, of the people in that day and age actually knew how to read. From what I've been able to ascertain with my study, there were schools that taught people how to read. The boys needed to be able to have knowledge of the law before they could be considered a child of the law. I think that's the, if anybody knows Hebrew, I think that's what bar mitzvah says, son of the law. That they had to pass basically a test, which was probably oral in nature, about the law. They may have been able to recite huge passages from what we would call the five books of the law, the books of Moses, from the Pentateuch. And they heard, so the problem was they didn't have printing presses. Everything was written down by hand. So there was probably one set of scrolls per town, per community, in the synagogue, which the rabbis would guard, protect, and maybe even jealously guard access to that. We're going to teach you what you need to know. If we don't tell it to you, it's not something you really need to know. Now, that could go back to what was considered least and most, but or least and great. But that's the situation that the people there were under. Is they had people, you know, they've been told, this is what you need to do. So this passage, I don't believe, is a reference to specifically the law, but to what the scribes and the Pharisees have been teaching the people about the law. So Jesus had just said, you know, he just in verse 19, whoever breaks the law or breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever does and teaches them shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. So I believe that Jesus is still talking about the scribes and Pharisees, about the what they've taught compared to what the intention that God had in the law was. So we're not comparing, I don't believe, the law with a reinterpretation of the rules, shall we say, of what God's intention was. Rather, a clarification between the traditional interpretation of the law by the scribes of the Pharisees, the rabbis of old that had commented on it, and what Jesus, as God, knew that the original intent of the law was. One of the things that's important about this, I believe, is even here, for us, this stresses the importance of personal Bible study. It's great to come to a class, have somebody share information with you. It's great to hear a sermon preached from the pulpit. I mean, we can read the Bible a lot about sermons. We're reading a sermon. We're studying a sermon. But think about what Paul said, or what Luke says in Acts chapter 17 about Paul and some of his encounters. As he was moving through Asia Minor, as he was moving around in different places, preaching and teaching, in Acts chapter 17, verses 10 and 11, we read, the brethren immediately sent Paul and Silas away by night to Berea. They had been in Thessalonica. They had been under threat. When they arrived, they went to the synagogue of the Jews. These, speaking of the brethren in Berea, and the brethren that they were talking about would have been Jewish folks, these were more fair-minded than those in Thessalonica, in that they received the word with all readiness and searched the scriptures daily to find out whether these things were so. They didn't just take Paul and Silas' word for what they were being told. It's like, it's a great message, Paul. Let me see if I can just make sure that you're telling us straight, that you're telling us truth. I think that's a great reminder for us that when we hear something, when we read something, study. Look at the Bible. See if what we're reading is true. See if what we're hearing is true. So Jesus goes on, and that contrast, that application, I believe applies all the way through chapter 5. Every time we read, you've heard it said of old, but I say to you. Just keep that whole process in mind, that situation in mind. We're going to be looking today at verses 21 through 26. So if you want to turn in your Bibles, if you haven't already, to Matthew 5. You've heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raka, or Raka, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. Agree with your adversary quickly while you're on the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge hand you over to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. Assuredly, I say to you, you will by no means get out of there till you've paid the last penny. That's Jesus That's what we're going to study this morning, what Jesus said. As I started out, in the contrast, you have heard that it was said by the scribes and Pharisees. Now, Jesus doesn't say that right in that exact passage. He says, you have heard that it was said to those of old. Who's been telling them that? The teachers, the scribes and Pharisees. They were taught, you shouldn't murder. You'll be in danger of judgment. If you look at those passages, you shall not murder. You can refer back to Exodus 20 and 13, Deuteronomy 5 and 17. Exodus 20, 13 is basically what we would call the first giving of the Ten Commandments. That's when the Israelites are at Sinai, and we can read in our Bibles, they were told what those commandments were. Some translations will say, thou shalt not kill. The intent, thou shalt not murder. In Deuteronomy, which means second telling, we read the same thing, thou shalt not murder. It says, whoever murders will be in danger of judgment. Judgment from whom? Under the Jewish system, there were different levels of judgment. If we read in Deuteronomy 16, verse 18, we read instructions given to the Jews that they are supposed to, or the Israelites, that they are supposed to appoint judges and officers for each community. These are going to be the people that are going to sit in the gate. You know, in a lot of the passages we read about the older men, the wise men. We read in Proverbs 31 in the description of the excellent wife, that her husband can sit in the gate. So those were the men who were judges, shall we say. Not judges in the same sense that Samuel and some of the other, not Samuel, he's some of the earlier judges that came through Israel before the kings came around. But these were just the guys in each community that dealt with disagreements between folks. We can read also about cities of refuge in Deuteronomy chapter 19 and also in Numbers chapter 35. We read about God telling Moses, when you get into the land that I'm giving you, you need to establish cities of refuge. So if somebody unintentionally takes a life, the New King James calls it an unintentional manslayer, somebody unintentionally takes a life, they can go to the city of refuge so that the blood kin, the avenger of blood, who would be a relative of the person who got killed, doesn't take vengeance. So when the people would appoint the cities, the judges, they'd listen to the story. They'd listen to, you know, what did you do? What did you say? What's the background? They'd do some research into what's going on here. You know, the avenger of blood could say, you know, they have their piece. They're like the prosecutor. The person that had done or was accused of doing, you know, committing a murder or committing a killing could have their say. And the judges would make a determination. The more serious crimes, if you will, were heard by the Sanhedrin. And as a result, a lot of times the judges, just the local judges, if you will, would hand out, I don't want to say less severe penalties, because they could also hand down a death sentence back in the day. In that, if you were adjudged guilty of murder, not of an unintentional killing, but of murder, they would just say, sorry, you can't be in the city of refuge. They'd put you out of the city of refuge so that the avenger of blood could then take their vengeance. Some of the things that they used were things like intent. Were you lying in wait? When you read those passages that I mentioned earlier, Deuteronomy chapter 19, verses 1 through 13, Numbers 35, chapter 35, verses 9 through 28, you'll see a listing, you know, were they lying in wait? Did you hit them with a rock? Knowing, you know, with the intention of hurting them, had there been a history of hatred or animosity between the parties? And the punishments handed down, as I said, could be if you were found to have unintentionally killed someone, in order to not be killed by the Avenger of Blood, you were restricted to stay within the city walls of the city of refuge until the high priest died, the current high priest. So I guess if you wanted to go home, go back to your family, maybe you had to hope that the high priest was old. I mean, under the original way God established it, the high priest served until he died. Now, when we get to Jesus' time, the high priest, because we read about Annas, we read about Caiaphas, both having been high priests, so it seems like it was more of an appointed or elected type office that they were in. So punishments could be anything from restriction, if you will, jail time, because if you're restricted to stay within a city, you can't go out. You're kind of limited on what you can do. To me, that sounds like almost like being in prison. You're restricted inside of some walls, can't go out. If you go out, if you choose to go out, now in our system, we don't usually just let prisoners just walk out on their own while they're under sentence. If you went out and the Avenger of Blood caught you out away from the city, they could take vengeance. So that was the teaching of the scribes and Pharisees was, don't commit a murder, or you're in danger of judgment. What did Jesus teach? Jesus said, I say to you that whoever's angry with his brother, and the New King James has without a cause, I know some translations don't have that in there, shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, or Raca, R-A-C-A, shall be in danger of the council. Whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. So Jesus is taking it from an external thing, don't murder. Don't go through the motions. Don't actually commit the murder. That was what the scribes and Pharisees were saying. Jesus saying, don't be angry at him. Now, he says with your brother. I believe as we study and look at all the different times that Jesus uses the term brother, he's not just talking about blood kin. Oftentimes he's talking about a fellow Israelite, a fellow Jew. He could also be talking about just your fellow man. If you think about it, all human beings have God as a father. Not all human beings acknowledge him as their father, but all human beings have God as a father. So in a sense, every human being is your brother or sister. Jesus taught that anger is dangerous. By his saying, but I say to you, whoever's angry without a cause, over a minor issue, for whatever reason, is in danger of judgment. Doesn't say you're going to be under judgment. He says you're in danger of judgment. So Jesus takes what the scribes and Pharisees used as an external murder, and he internalizes it. He says, don't have the intention. Don't have the thought. Don't plant that seed that will lead to murder. There are probably very few murders that occur that don't have anger at the very beginning. Now, there are probably some, we read about them, sadly. We hear about them, the thrill killers, the whatever. We read about them today, about people that just... they do that because they do that. Not because they're angry at the individual that they're killing. So Jesus says, don't plant the seed that leads to the from which nearly all murder grows. He goes on to say, if you say to your brother, Raca, and I had to do a little bit of studying on that, Raca was an expression of derision, which basically meant empty head. Now today, we probably wouldn't say, you empty head. But we'll have words that are very similar.
Numbskull.
Moron. Stupid. What was that?
Peanut brain.
I mean, we've got words that mean the exact same thing. And Jesus is saying, if you, in anger, say that, you're in danger of the council. The council was a more serious court, if you will. That's like saying, okay, if you're angry at your brother without a cause, you've got to worry about the local circuit court. But if you say peanut brain, numbskull, you're in danger of the Supreme Court. Supreme Court can put up some more severe punishments. You know, think about what these people are living under. I'm sure the oppression they had felt they had cause to be angry. That doesn't mean just because they felt they did, that God would agree with it. And if you want to think about that derogatory language, that railing speech, that's kind of like that seed of anger that was planted, starting to sprout. You know, the pod opens up and the little part going out. I'm not a farmer. I don't know how all those things work exactly. I remember biology class and we took a pea or something and put it inside of a wet paper towel and kept wetting it. And pretty soon here came a little plant started growing out of it. Then he goes on even farther. Jesus says, saying, you fool, put somebody at risk of hellfire. Wow. I mean, sadly, how many times do we hear, think that about somebody? In their time, the word translated into English as you fool was a strong expression of contempt. Some modern equivalents, I won't say. Wishing the absolute worst on someone. Striking out with words of condemnation. We hear them even on TV now. Jesus is saying, if you're angry, that anger festers. That anger can grow. You can go from calling somebody a peanut brain or a numbskull or a moron to saying some things that are even worse. The seedling continues to grow. So Jesus is teaching, it's not just about the external act of murder. It's about that internal thought, that anger that can be the confessor. Well, some additional thoughts that I have, so we'll take just a little bit of an aside here. Is anger sin?
No.
How do we know that?
Be angry and sin not.
Okay, perfect. That's right here in my note.
There's also a righteous anger.
Okay.
Jesus displayed it in the temple.
Okay, exactly. So it's because we know Jesus was sinless. The Bible tells us he was sinless. It also tells us he was angry. So anger is not a sin. David in Psalm 4:4. Be angry and sin not, as Virgil told us. In Psalm 37, he says, cease from anger, forsake wrath, which would kind of like be extreme anger, rage. Paul, in talking to the Christians or writing to the Christians at Ephesus, in chapter 4, verse 26, starts with David's comment, be angry and sin not, or do not sin. And he expounds on that. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. What does that mean? It's okay to be angry, but
reconcile before.
Okay. You got to deal with it.
Don't let it fester in your heart.
Exactly. Don't let it fester. I think too often that's part of a problem that happens. And Jesus was aware of that is perfectly human. To get angry, let it fester, let it grow into saying things or doing things that we would come to regret. As Bruce mentioned, Jesus got angry. That's how we know anger is not a sin. The thing is, anger can lead to sin if it's allowed to fester, if it's allowed to grow. 1 John chapter 3, end of verse 14 and verse 15. He who does not love his brother abides in death. Whoever hates his brother is a murderer. Hatred equals murder in God's eyes. And you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. And in John 17, we read, this is eternal life. That they, Jesus in his prayer, speaking of people, specifically disciples, but extended to all people, that they may know you, the only true God and Jesus Christ whom you've sent. So if a person harbors hatred in their heart, it says they don't know God. It says they don't, because God is love. You read that in John, in 1 John. Jesus in Matthew 12, 37. Now, an outgrowth of anger, according to Jesus, is what? Raca, you fool. Saying some pretty harsh things. In Matthew chapter 12, verse 37, Jesus says, by your words you will be justified. And by your words you will be condemned. So what we say, even in a moment of frustration, if not repented from, could condemn us. We need to be careful always about what we say, about our attitudes, our feelings. Today, think about it. What's one of the common, it's a phrase that's been, I don't know, when it was coined, if you will. Most of us have heard of it. Many of us may have even suffered from it to an extent. Road rage. How many people have been angry at somebody that cut them off in traffic? Have thought things, or maybe yelled in their car at the other person with words like, idiot. We laugh, we chuckle, but that's exactly what Jesus is talking about. This week, yesterday or the day before, a 16-year-old girl who had just gotten done shopping at a mall in Pennsylvania was shot in the head and killed by somebody over because of road rage. Road rage, anger. You know, maybe she was thinking about the clothes she bought or the new CD that she was going to listen to or DVD she was going to look at. I don't know. And inadvertently, not paying attention, cut somebody off. I don't know what the whole circumstance was, but some people seem to have a very, very, very short trigger, or short fuse, quick trigger. And in this case, that is more literal than just figurative. So even momentary anger can have devastating results. Jesus goes on to say, in essence, if you got anger like that, God doesn't want your worship. It's unacceptable to him. If you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar, go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. The gift that he was talking about is worship. You have a gift. I mean, think of it. The people he's talking to right there, Israelites, living under the Levitical sacrificial system, their worship often, maybe entirely, was comprised of the gifts they offered. A couple of different classes ago, when Ed was teaching about this Levitical sacrificial system, we talked about the burnt offering and the peace offering, the meal offering, being expressions of worship from Israelites, from Jews, to God. What would we as Christians consider a gift? What is our worship? Prayer? Songs of praise? Taking communion? Jesus says, you're taking your gift to the altar. Now, think about where he is. He's just northwest of the Sea of Galilee. He's talking to people from all around the region. But where did they go to offer their gifts? Jerusalem. That was a little ways. If you hop in your car and drive it today, it's an hour, I guess. Carmen, you've been over there. Is that about right? These people didn't have cars, so they had to walk. So think about this. From their perspective, Jesus says, you're taking your gift to the altar. You've taken your sheep, goat, bull, and you've led it. Or maybe you sold something and then you bought one in Jerusalem. You take it to the altar, and there you remember somebody has something against you. Now, the fact that somebody has something against you says what? Who's at fault? You are. You did something to someone. You said something to someone that caused an issue, caused a problem. You're supposed to leave your gift right there. Let's say you just walked up to a priest. You get ready to sacrifice that animal. Remember in the Levitical sacrificial system, the person who's offering the animal is the one that killed it. But you get there and you remember, my neighbor back home, I did something that's caused a rift between us. So, Bruce?
What if you did nothing? People have things against you that you're totally innocent of.
That's true. So Jesus says, offer.
You should still go, even if you're innocent, go and reconcile with that brother so there's no hard feelings.
But you remember that they have something against you. What are you supposed to do? He didn't say, go ahead and finish your off gift, and then go home and take care of it. He said, leave your gift right there. Go home. Okay, that's a walking thing. So again, we're talking about walking from Jerusalem through Samaria, possibly. Some Jews would have gone around Samaria, so that's going to add distance to your travel. Go back home, make it right. Reconcile with the person that's got something against you. It's the duty, it's the responsibility of the person who is at fault or perceived to be at fault to pursue reconciliation. Now, what is the kind of the responsibility of the other person, the victim, the offended person? What responsibility or what obligation do they have?
Forgive.
How many times? As many as it takes. As many as times as somebody has offended you, if they ask for forgiveness, Jesus told Peter. Peter said, man, I'm going to go way out on them. I'm going to say, do I have to forgive them up to seven times? Jesus said, I don't say to you seven times. Depending on the translation, it's either seven times seven, or 77, or 70 times seven. And Jesus isn't talking about do advanced mathematics and figure out, okay, the 491st time this person's, done something to me, I don't have to forgive them. That's not the point. The point is, if somebody does something and they ask for forgiveness, the obligation is to forgive. Matthew chapter 6, we're going to get to at some point here in the future in our study. If you do not forgive men their trespasses, that's okay with God. No, what's he say? If you don't forgive men your trespasses, what's that, Ed?
He won't forgive you.
He won't forgive yours. So there is an obligation on the side of that offended person, if you will. If as the offender or supposed offender goes and talks to and tries to make reconciliation, that person should accept it. If you're the one who's offended, you should accept it. that offer of reconciliation.
What if they don't? What if the person that you offended won't accept or even talk to you about your...
Then that's your problem.
You have already done what God has, what Jesus said. You go and be reconciled to your brother. You're doing your part. You are attempting to be reconciled. And if they are just dead set firm against, you've asked for forgiveness. Now, part of being reconciled, if you cause damage, you borrowed somebody's ox, it fell and broke its leg, had to be put down, you were obligated to replace that ox. But if you haven't done that yet, that could be what, that's an example, something that you make restitution. I was talking to Ed right before class, and I said, okay, now refresh my mind on this, because although I studied it, refresh my mind. If you trespassed against somebody, now you have a gift that you were going to give God, that you were going to present at the altar. But now you have a trespass offering, possibly a sin offering, before your gift offering. So what Jesus is saying is, going back to this whole thought, if you do something or say something in anger, your worship's unacceptable to God until you make it right. That you is me too, by the way.
Isn't Jesus speaking specifically to Jews who adhere to the old law?
And that's why I said at the beginning that while he's talking to people there, mm-hmm. in principle, he's talking, I believe, to us as well. If I do something to offend you, and I know that you're offended, it's my obligation to come and try to make that right.
Mm-hmm. Where does that leave grace under Jesus?
There's still grace. But again, if you know that you've offended somebody and you choose not to make it right, mm-hmm. are you still walking in the light? Are you still trying to do everything that Jesus says to do? Go make it right. You know, that's a question that would be a good question for God. I don't have a good answer for you other than...
If I decide not to do that, I step out of the light, and if a truck hit me, I would die? Go to hell?
Well, again, in Matthew chapter 6, it says if you trespass, the direction that you're asking is if you are the offended or the offender. If you don't try to make restitution.
I know that I hurt Bruce's feelings, and I decide, you know what, I'm just going to let him, like, get over it in time.
Okay.
I'm not going to go make it right. I'm just going to, like, shoo it under the rug.
That's a great question. I don't have a definitive answer because I don't see anywhere in the Bible that says that. But I do say, you know, we're supposed to walk in the light. We're supposed to try to be like Jesus. Jesus didn't intentionally, be careful with how I say this. There are times he intentionally offended people, the scribes and Pharisees. Why did he offend them? Rod?
It'd be kind of agape love to do what's best
okay.
for your neighbor.
Okay.
I think that would refer to that.
Okay. So if we practice agape love, we're going to be looking out for the best interests of our neighbor, our brother, whatever. I think there's a big room for grace, but at the same time, if we willfully do something, are we trying to walk in the light? If we willfully do something, and that could be willfully not trying to make amends for a fault or a slight.
Will God forgive you and give you grace for a sin that you didn't ask for forgiveness for? In your pride,
that's a great point. It's a great question, Kelly. And that's all I can say is, you know, God's grace is deep and wide, but I can't tell you exactly where the boundary is. And I think that's the point. Sometimes a lot of people want to say, how close can I get to violating that and not violate it? How, you know, how far does God's grace cover? Does it cover me here or here or here? You know, at what point am I not walking in the light? At what point, because it says if we're walking in the light, if he's in the light, the blood of Jesus cleanses us from all sin. So if we're trying to do what Jesus says we're supposed to do, what God says we're supposed to do, even if it's unintentional, I believe we're covered. But if we know that we've committed an offense and we don't want to do anything about it, I think we're getting into a risky territory. Virgil? Again, I think. So we're talking personal opinion.
Well, and then there's the fact that our salvation depends on the grace and mercy of God and not by works of righteousness which we have done, but according to his mercy.
Right.
So we can't be right enough to be totally pure and clean and sinless. It's not possible.
Right.
So the blood continually flows and cleanses us. We can step out of the light or move our way out of the light by turning our attitude, our mind, our thoughts, our belief, our compassion, our love against Jesus.
Okay.
But if we have all those things and we're in the light, the blood flows and we're saved. That's
right.
The beauty of the gospel of Christ.
And I agree with that. And that's why I was saying that with the hypothetical situation that Kelly brought up, that she knows that she offended Bruce and she's just not gonna say sorry, not gonna say, would you forgive me? I apologize. Nothing. She's just gonna leave it there hanging. That's where we start getting into that, you know, am I turning my back on what God has said? So our worship is unacceptable to God. It says, God, the Holy Spirit, through John, in 1 John chapter 4, says, if someone says, I love God, and hates his brother, he's a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he's seen, how can he love God who he hasn't seen? This commandment we have from him, speaking of God, that he who loves God must love his brother also. And I think that's the agape love there that, Rod, you were bringing up. In Isaiah chapter 59, verses 1 through 3, so we're talking to people who we're living under the law. Behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, nor is his ear heavy that it cannot hear. But your iniquities have separated you from your God, and your sins have hidden his face from you so that he will not hear. For your hands are defiled with blood, okay, if you are actually gone to the point of killing someone, your fingers are with iniquity, your lips have spoken lies, your tongue has uttered perversity. God, through the prophet Isaiah, saying, God doesn't hear our prayers. God doesn't accept our worship if we are in opposition to him. So some consequences. Agree with your adversary quickly while you're on the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge hand you over to the officer, you'd be thrown into prison. Assuredly, I say, you'll be by no means get out of there till you've paid the last penny. Jesus is saying, look at this whole thought process that we're looking at. Scribes and Pharisees, don't commit murder, you're in danger of judgment. Jesus says, don't be angry without a cause. And then he goes on to expound, I believe, on that. You might say something, you might do something. It's up to you to go make that right. If you don't, what have you kind of created? An enemy, an adversary? You created somebody that might seek redress. Especially in the United States today, it seems to be a very litigious society. People will sue for the least or minorest of things. Libel, slander, assault, vandalism, and the list goes on. What kind of punishments did people get back then? If you look at the law, if you did something, you were fined. 20, 25% added on to the cost of whatever it was to replace it. You might get jail or prison. And I use that in regard to the Israelites as the city as a refuge. Today, if we do something in a fit of anger, we say something, we could go to court. We could suffer a fine depending on what it is that we did. Scratched somebody's car, broke somebody's windows. Again, the list goes on. Could go to jail for a while. Or the person that shot that 16-year-old girl, if convicted, depending on what the laws are in Pennsylvania, could be subject to capital punishment for a momentary bit of anger. So we need to be mindful of our words and our actions, how they affect others, especially when we're angry, when our guard is down, if you will. When everything's going great, it's easy to be all smiles, happy. When things aren't going so great, that quick, we can think something, we can say something. And if we don't get it under control, if we don't have that thought process under control, we could say or do something that we then would regret. We might think it's trivial, but if the other person's offended, if they are, and now, when I'm talking offended, I'm not talking about, there are people that are gonna be offended, as you said, when we didn't do anything. Or we were doing the right thing. Do you suppose there are people that are offended when people preach the word? Absolutely. That's not what this passage is talking about. This passage is talking about you did something or said something in anger. Again, that's a generic you. Jesus is talking to a multitude. This applies to me. It applies to every human that's walked the earth except Jesus. If you say or do something in anger, you could put yourself in a position where your worship's unacceptable to God. Jesus says, and he's kind of pointing out that we're always under a microscope, magnifying glass, if you will. You're the light of the world. A city set on a hill can't be hidden. So let your light so shine before men that they see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. In other words, be busy doing the good things and the right things and building people up, not breaking people down. James says in James chapter 1, verses 19 and 20, and he's speaking in that chapter a lot about trials. And he's not talking specifically about going to court. He's talking about difficulties that we encounter, things that we face. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man, and this is going to be a person, not just men, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. And I think the part that applies most to what we've been talking about this morning, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. What are we supposed to be seeking? The righteousness of God. Any other thoughts? I know we're a little bit long. I appreciate your attention, your contributions to class, participation. So let's go ahead and get ready for worship if we could.